Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Jack Burton and the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes. You just listen to the old Pork Chop Express and take his advice on a dark and stormy night, all right? When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you've paid your dues. Well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail. Now, Weasley, I'm not saying that I've been everywhere and I've done everything. But I do know it's a pretty amazing planet we live on here. A man would have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe.
Welcome to Slow Pitch, a podcast that takes sports movies, or in this case, cheesy 80 kung fu movies, too seriously, or perhaps not seriously enough. We're your hosts.
Indeed!
That's not what I was expecting.
Indeed!
And my ears
expect it to do it.
And my ears are shot.
I don't think I was high enough. I tried to do that without stretching first. And I need to be taken to the emergency room.
So that's Sean Williams.
I had a different quote in my head, and then I just, like, at the last second, went with the low pan indeed.
So Sean Williams went with the low pan, and Brad Etherly, we may be trapped. We are two guys who consider sports movies and 1980s Kurt Russell movies a type of aerobic exercise. Today's episode is a review of the 1986 classic Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
This movie is a wild ride.
Well, let me tell you, let me back up a little bit. So when I was in grade school, there was a couple of summers where my parents let me go stay with my uncle for a week. And, you know, he lived in Charlotte. He was a bachelor. We just kind of like, it was sort of like being in heaven. Like, he took me to amusement parks. I think we saw a movie every day that we were there. it was like all the rules that applied to my everyday life were just kind of thrown out the window. I think we ate at McDonald's every day as well, which just seemed like a complete heaven to me. But one of the movies that we went and saw in the summer of 1986, which, by the way, I also remember Call Me Al was big on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
That summer. But one of the movies that he took me to see, and I knew nothing about it. I didn't know who Kurt Russell was. I hadn't seen a preview for it. Sure. My uncle basically just took me and said, "Trust me, this is going to be funny." And I was skeptical, but sure enough, I mean, I left that theater mesmerized, and would later, you know, I was highly entertained by it. A lot of laughs in the theater, especially stuff like shooting the gun up into the concrete and the debris, knocking Kurt Russell out cold. You know, that got a huge laugh from me in the theater. But and then, like, when I was in high school, that's when I would, like, come to memorize this movie and just, like, watch it over and over and over and over again.
Now, is this the uncle that I went to a UT Vols game with that walked faster than I can even run from the parking lot to the stadium? He was leaving me in the dust.
Frank. Yeah. He doesn't like to wait around on his Vols games.
I kind of have a similar story. I didn't have, you know, we had a VCR, but we didn't have like a whole lot of movies in. We didn't have cable growing up. And so when we went to Nashville to visit family every summer, I had an uncle who was like 3 years older than me. And so we would watch MTV, together, and like I would learn all the cool music from him. And then he had a VCR, but he also, like, since he was 3 years older than me, he just seemed like he was like 25 years older than me, though, in some ways, because, you know, although we could play laser tag together in the backyard and have fun and doing that, he had like a whole library of VHS tapes. And one of them was Big Trouble in Little China. And I don't remember watching it and committing it to memory or even thinking that it was terribly funny or anything like that. The only thing that I can recall from watching that with him was when Thunder blew up, and being slightly A, repulsed, and slightly B, just astounded with humor, you know, just humor, just thinking it was the funniest thing ever. So it was real. I mean, I was 10, you know, or 11. And so that would be a pretty heavy movie to watch if you were 10.
Well, and I, like, when I saw this movie, I'm not even 100% sure I knew it was supposed to be funny. Like,
sure.
It was fighting, it was kung fu and stuff. And so that was serious business when you're 10. And so the fact that there were laughs in it, like, I'm like, am I supposed to be laughing at this? You know, when Kurt Russell is trying to get the knife out of his boot and accidentally throws it off screen. And when he finally comes back, what's his name? Wang has actually taken care of all of the bad guys. And, you know, I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like a cartoon is funny.
Well, and it's interesting because I think that, you know, if you just watch this movie at face value, it may kind of escape you that Kurt Russell's not really the hero in this movie, you know. And I don't know if you listened to the commentary. I know we listened to it, you know, 15, 16 years ago when we were roommates, but I listened to it again, and Kurt Russell and John Carpenter repeatedly said that the execs, even watching the movie, the producers and the studio execs, they didn't realize that Kurt Russell was like not even an anti-hero. He just was not the hero.
Who did they say the hero was? I forgot.
I think that they pretty much put it on Wang, that Wang was kind of the ultimate hero, that every Kurt Russell's character, you know, had all the bravado and all the charisma of being the hero. But when it actually came to executing, you know, he's getting hit on the head by concrete blocks. He's getting stuck with a kung fu guy stuck to the end of his boots with his knife stuck in him and can't move. You know, he's all these different things where he's, you know, he's about to lead the charge into the elevator. And then, you know, he's like, we need to turn around, you know, just like my opening quote. He thinks he's about to do it all, but then in reality, he's not about to do anything.
Well, okay. I sort of disagree with the people who made this movie about their movie. So basically, to me, Jack Burton is in the Han Solo role, where it sort of gives modern day Americans something to identify with, because you have all of this Chinese sorcery and black magic and everything. And he's the skeptical American, like, I can do it, I'm tough. You know, this essentially the role that Han Solo played in the Star Wars movies. And if you talk, like, if you talk to a lot of kids growing up and said, who's your favorite Star Wars character? Even though Luke is the, I guess, technical hero, a lot of people's favorite character is Han Solo. And I will point out this, when push came to shove and somebody had to kill Lo Pan, it was Jack Burton who had the reflexes.
Yeah, no, and they do mention that at the end of the movie, he is the one. They basically state that the only thing that he does correctly has killed David Lopan, and it's not even something that he does. It's supposedly these reflexes that he's, you know, his super reflexes that are attuned to his body or something. So it's not even something that he's really giving to the character. It's just his body is reacting. So it was interesting, but Again, just well,
in terms of one-liners, Jack Burton is definitely the hero.
It is. I mean, I just kept thinking, like, whoever wrote this movie is just a genius, and I don't mm-hmm. know what else they've done, but I don't know why this one was it just struck every key. And of course, Jack Burton hits every note just spot on.
Yeah. The writers were Gary Goldman, I guess was the main writer, and a guy named David Weinstein, and adaptation by W.D. Richter.
And was this so like a short story or something?
Yeah, maybe so. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that John Carpenter didn't have some say in it. It's like, and you know, some credit has to go to Kurt Russell, too, because
of course
he looks at that page and says, okay, this is this guy. I would like to briefly talk about the Jack Burton wardrobe.
the moccasin boots.
Yeah. So basically it's okay. We go from top to bottom. Harley Davidson hat that is about like seven stories high. He's got the, I don't even know what, I'm sure you can buy it online somewhere now, but he's wearing a tank top, a white tank top that has like a Chinese guy on it. And I don't know what's happening on it, but it's like some sort of tank top with like some sort of Asian.
It's got like a kung fu motif that was popular in the 80s. I had, you know, something similar as a kid, but it's kind of a cartoonish kung fu karate. I don't know the difference between karate and kung fu, but but I'm thinking this is more kung fu. But I guess karate is Japanese and kung fu maybe Chinese.
I can't believe you said that.
That might be an oversimplification of it. But yeah, it's definitely a cool 80s tank top.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. And then over that, he's got the Baja. That's part of it. But at some point in the movie, at different points in the movie, at one point he's wearing like a trench coat thing. Like during the gambling scene, he's wearing like a trench coat. And then later in the movie, he's wearing a denim jacket. Like when they go in as the telephone repairman or whatever, he's wearing a denim jacket. And
I don't, yeah, I, so, I remember the poncho or the whatever, the Baja.
Yeah, the Baja. Well, and he just randomly takes the Baja off when he's climbing through the sewer. Like they're just like escaping through the sewer and he just like takes the Baja off.
Oh, when they dive into the pool of water?
No, this is before then. Like they're sort of like escaping through like these little tunnels. This is right after they've witnessed the big fight between the two gangs.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
And early then, on.
Yeah. And then he takes the jean jacket off when they're in the elevator and the water starts coming up. Mm. And I guess he just needs to be able to swim better. And I think he's in a Baja again right at the end when he leaves. So anyway.
Where is this closet?
Yeah, I don't know. It must maybe he had a spare Baja in the back of the Pork Chop Express. But
except that he didn't have access to the Pork Chop Express.
Well, he did at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So the Lords of Fury or whatever that gang was called, like maybe they didn't rummage through the truck and because they certainly didn't steal the spare set of keys. Yeah, and then of course he has the knee high moccasins. Which, why haven't I been Jack Burton for Halloween yet?
Well, and don't forget the high-waisted stonewashed blue jeans.
Yeah, which the tank top is tucked in, by the way. If you haven't seen the movie, he tucks in the tank top.
But he also, his character, he also just kind of does this kind of funny strut throughout the whole movie. And he just, the way his body actually moves is funny. Mm-hmm. So just a great job all around by Kurt Russell. Man, where do you want to start? I mean, I know we kind of touched on some things, but one thing I thought was funny was we open up the movie with Egg Shin or Egg, what's his name?
Egg Shin or something. Yeah.
Egg Shin. Yeah. Egg Shin. And he's like in police station giving his recount of what happened
to his lawyer.
Okay, that's what it is. But But I feel like, and they said in the commentary, that was just kind of something to establish Jack Burton as a hero.
Yeah.
But in reality, they didn't even want that scene. That was the execs telling them they had that. So the beginning of the movie to me is the Pork Chop Express.
Yeah.
Where he's just on a CB, just talking to the air, and nobody's listening.
please insert that opening. Because like those, the two, I guess we'll call them CB monologues in this movie are just phenomenal. You know, coming to you on a dark and stormy night. I don't have it. I can't say it off the top of my head right now. We'll play it here. But yeah, it's just phenomenal. It just sort of establishes him right away as this fast talking, brash, know it all. And we also start to establish some of his catchphrases in this. This is the first. It's all in the reflexes we hear. In this opening salvo. And he also says dark and stormy night a few times throughout the movie.
Yeah. I think, okay, so do you want to hold off to the end of the episode to give your ranking of Jack Burton quotes?
Or do you want to
just get into it now?
Yeah, let's do it now.
All right. So I have 7 here that I wrote down as possible intro quotes. I used "We may be trapped." I thought that that was just a hilarious turn. I'll give the other one that I won't include in my top 5, but it was 6.9 on the Richter scale.
Yeah.
6.9 on the Richter scale.
What is that? Yeah. They get in the truck. They're about to make a big escape, and I think Gracie says, "What was that?" He goes, 6.9 on the Richter scale, and then busts through the wall. It's like everything is melodramatic, which makes just all the funnier.
All right. So what's your number 5?
Well, first off, I'd like to give a honorable mention to every line that Jack Burton has in the movie, because like I was watching this movie last night, rewatching it last night. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to try to see if there's any sort of just idle Jack Burton line that just, I don't know, isn't entertaining in some way, or it's throwaway, or he's just kind of moving the plot along or whatever. But it never happens. Like even when he's on the phone with his insurance company trying to figure out about his truck, even that's funny. But okay, so my number 5 line is when he's talking to Lopan, and Lopan is kind of laid out why he's, you know, how he's going to rule the universe from beyond the grave or whatever. And Jack Burton looks at him really seriously and he says, "Are you crazy? Is that your problem?"
That's one of mine.
"Are you crazy? Is that your problem?"
Yeah. And I have repeated that like in my real life. Like I'll be like, "Are you crazy? Is that your problem?"
It's such a great line. And it's just played so, so great. He's just a genius.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I will retract my 6.9 on the Richter scale. That's going to be my number 5. Here's the problem. I didn't write down all of the context with some of these quotes.
I might be able to help you remember it.
You might be able to help out. So I've got one. I'm going to put my two honorable mentions are "We may be trapped." And then the other one is "What will come out no more?" Is that what it says?
Yeah. Okay. First, let me set some context for this.
Why is that funny?
For the "We may be trapped." So Jack is the leader of this group. He's orchestrating this escape. All these women from a brothel have been kidnapped, and he is trying to help both them and Gracie Law and this journalist that they've befriended, trying to get them out of Lopan's lair. And so he kind of turns around and is essentially quarterbacking the situation. He's like, "All right." He goes, "It gets real simple from here. I'm going to run some interference." And, you know, he kind of tells how they're going to distract the guards and lays out this plan of what's going to happen once he opens this door to get them to the bus so they can escape. As soon as he lays out this elaborate plan, he pulls open the door and there's all these these gang members ready to fight, and he immediately shuts it again. He turns around and he goes, "We may be trapped." And so plan is now out the door, and it's hilarious.
We may be trapped.
What was your other one? What was the other
What will come out no more? It doesn't even make sense.
Okay. What this is when they are making their way through the Chinatown underground, and they've Jack is with all these guys. I can't remember the name of the gang that they're with, like the guys who are the punching or whatever. But they are making their way like past this like sewer and stuff, and we've already seen some like creatures mm-hmm. that allude to black magic and everything. And while they're sort of making their way across this kind of like by the side of this underground river, like this huge spider comes out of a hole in the wall and takes one of the guys, and Egg Shin like throws this like magical ball at it, and it like blows up, and he goes, "You will come out no more." And Jack that's Burton right. goes, he goes, "Huh? What? What will come out no more?"
That's right. And then, that's right.
And then Egg Shin's like, "Let's go." And Jack Burton goes,
"Will come out no more."
What? Huh? What will come out no more?
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't making good English to me, but now that you refresh my memory.
Well, that is my number four. What will come out no more? That is number four for me.
See, this is great. Okay, so I'll just go ahead and say that my number four is the "Are you crazy? Is that your problem?" That is hilarious.
Yeah.
So what's your number three?
All right, my number three is...
I'm afraid we're going to have at least one more overlapping, because line is just amazing.
Yeah.
But go ahead, number three.
Well, number three, okay. They are the gang, you know, Wang and Jack Burton and this Chinese... I don't know if they're a gang. They're not a gang, but they're some sort of warlords who are fighting for good. And Egg Shin... They're making their way to Lopan's lair, and they stop because they need to drink some magic potion. And as they do it, they're kind of like filled with confidence. And Wang, they kind of start toasting different things. And Wang says, here's to the people who have fought before us. And here's to the red, white, and blue. May its colors never bleed. And then Jack Burton goes, "May the wings of liberty never lose a feather."
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
I thought you were going to go with, and I'll wait until you get through with all of yours, because you may have another part of that scene.
Narrowing Jack Burton's lines down to five is, it's nearly impossible, because like I said, everything that comes out of his mouth in this movie is high entertainment. There's a few that just kind of like you walk away from the theater or the, you know, the DVD or whatever thinking, okay, those are highlights. But there are several that I could have put in my top five that aren't necessarily in here.
Well, so my third one, my top three is it's a simple one, but it kind of sets the tone for Jack Burton. And it obviously foreshadows an event, and it's not the funniest line in the world, but the way he says it is also just classic Jack Burton. But it's the first time when Wang is trying to double or nothing. Also, they say nothing or double, which is a weird way of saying it, but they're betting, and Wang is trying to win his money back, and he says nothing or double, and Jack is not really wanting to take part. He's good with his money, wants to run, but Wang, which is a hilarious name, he says that he's going to chop this bottle in half with like a machete. It's like a glass beer bottle. And when he does it, like, instead of, you know, breaking the bottle, it skids out and flies towards Jack Burton across the table. And he just catches it real quick. And he says, "It's all in the reflexes, Wang." That's my top three.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I will get to "It's all in the reflexes," because I feel like that's like that has to be in here, because it's just such a, it's almost like the catchphrase of the movie sure. in some ways. All right. My number two is, and I remember thinking this was funny when I saw it in the theater, they're at Wang's restaurant and they're getting ready to go, you know, try to save these women who have been kidnapped and try to save Wang's fiance. And Jack Burton, like, I think the reporter whose name I can't remember, I think she wanted to go with them or something like that. And maybe Gracie Law wanted to go as well. And then
Margo,
they're told no. And he goes, okay, you people sit tight, keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn, call the president. Yeah. And I remember.
Okay. You people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn, call the president.
I remember thinking that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's my number two as well.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, then my number one is it's all in the reflexes, which they set up that line. You know, he says it during his first CB monologue. He says it right after the betting sequence with the bottle. And then, of course, at the very end of the movie, when it's all on the line and you think he's dead meat, he somehow miraculously catches a knife. He catches it without cutting himself and throws it right back. And after he's badly missed, by the way, he wasn't even close on that one where it hit the gong.
Saw on the reflexes.
But yeah, like what made him think, I guess it was that magic potion. What made him think he could throw that knife and do anything to Lo Pan? But he got it the second time. And then of course, you know, he, with that typical Jack Burton bravado, acted like he knew he had it in the bag all along.
So my number one, I just remember laughing hard at it, and I'm hoping you can provide a little bit more context, but it's pretty early in the movie, but he says, I'm a reasonable guy, but I've seen some very unreasonable things.
Yeah. Well, it's, and that's back when he's on the phone with, he'd been on the phone with his insurance company about his truck and Egg Shin and Uncle Chu, I think is his name. Like they're sort of explaining all this black magic stuff to him. And again, we're getting the kind of the tip, like, he's the American in the room who's he's the John Wayne kind of guy. And so he's like, listen, I'm a reasonable guy, but I've seen a lot of unreasonable things. Yeah, he rattles off a lot of great lines in that whole sequence. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm a reasonable guy, but I've just experienced some very unreasonable things.
But he's like, you know, you'll find that Gracie Law and even Egg Shin, they provide a lot of exposition throughout the
sure.
movie. Like they basically are like explaining the plot, which is, it, let's be honest, it's kind of hard to follow the exact plot, like keeping up with all of the folklore.
Yeah. It's not an easy film to wrap your head around. There's a lot of crazy things going on and you're not exactly sure what's going on at certain points. No, I, well, okay. So when you were talking about the toasts, and that was your number three or whatever, I thought you were going to bring up the elevator scene where they're feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Is it getting hot in here? Yeah. Well, and there's another, sorry, this podcast is just turning into us quoting Jack Burton, but there's another scene where, like, it's right before they drink the potion. Like, it's been explained that they're about to drink something, and they just saw some guards, had a close call with some guards, and Jack says, he goes, what's in the bag, Egg? Magic potion? Yeah. What are we going to do? Drink it? Yeah. Good. Thought so.
Yeah. Just rapid fire.
Yeah. What are we going to do? Drink it? Yeah.
So the plot is actually somewhat difficult to, if you had to explain it.
And I've seen this movie dozens of times and I have.
Yeah. I just know that Jack Burton is, I guess, friends with Wang.
Yeah.
What does Wang do? Like, what? I
guess he owns a restaurant.
but he's so much more than just a restaurant owner. Like he's seemingly.
He can fly and sword fight at the same time. Yes. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Like they never give like any kind of backstory as to why he is like some sort of ultimate warrior.
No, no. Other than he's from Chinatown.
He's he's Chinese.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. But like he's, you know, his girlfriend who let's just pause for a moment. His girlfriend, who has zero lines in the movie that I'm aware of, like maybe one. She may have one line. Like, even owning a restaurant, I don't think, and even being able to sword fight while flying, I think she's still out of Wang's league, just personally. Yes, he owns a restaurant, but he's also the kind of person who will stay up all night gambling while wearing an Indiana Jones hat.
Yeah, and seemingly like gambling his last dollar as well.
Yeah. Yeah. This he's not living the most responsible life for someone who's about to get married.
So, you know, I don't even care about the plot. Like, who cares about the plot, right? Because the beauty of this movie are the individual scenes, not the collective story, really. Unless you feel differently.
Well, okay, the plot, they basically set it up as good versus evil, and there's a good gang of warriors, and then there's an evil gang of warriors, and Lopan.
Yeah, shootout is amazing because it's happening in San Francisco.
It's happening in San Francisco, and the police apparently don't care. And also, Jack Burton's truck has zero bullet holes in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's discuss this. In the pantheon of movie vehicles, where does the Pork Chop Express rank? Like, you got Burt Reynolds' car from Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, you've got like Steve McQueen's Bullet, mm-hmm. and even Steve McQueen's motorcycle from like the Great Escape?
Yeah.
I know I'm probably missing several. Well, I mean, any James Bond car, I guess.
All the James cars. The Batmobile.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pork Chop Express is is a unique, one of a kind.
Well, and it's almost a physical representation of what Jack Burton is, too. It's like that truck going through Chinatown. It's like it's just too big, and it's like a bull in a china shop, you know. And that's kind of what he is in this movie. He's sort of this obnoxious thing in this sort of delicate world. Just to go back to the plot briefly, essentially they set it up to where Wang's fiance needs to be saved, and that leads to Gracie Law, who is Jack Burton's love interest. She needs to be saved as well. And it kind of becomes a caper from there. And, mm-hmm. and like I said, good versus evil. Egg Shen is kind of, he knows all of the sorcery and black magic on the good side, and the lore that goes with it. And Lopan is on the evil side. It's basically, I keep comparing this to Star Wars, but Egg Shen is like Obi-Wan Kenobi, mm-hmm. and Lopan is Darth Vader. And then there's a lot of fighting. There's a lot of hilarious one-liners and some special effects, which at the time were pretty good.
Yeah.
Cause that eye that sees them, the Lopan eye, like that was essentially, you know, this is 2 years after Ghostbusters, and we see a lot of the same special effects, which were done not with CGI. I mean, that eye probably was probably the closest thing to it, but that was stop motion animation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, stuff like thunder blowing up and everything like that, and the spider taking the guy, and there's a couple of other monsters in the mix, but yeah, you know, the special effects were pretty good. And I bet the lightning, you know, the basket head, we have to talk just about those guys at some point, the basket head who had like, these guys were warriors and they wore like wicker baskets on their heads. we just, no one really questioned it, but you know, to have the electricity and stuff like coming around his fists and everything, like,
sure.
Yeah, that was a big deal at the time.
It was. Yeah. And that, you know, when we're introduced to them, we're shortly, and this is all during that initial shootout between the two, you know, the good gang versus the bad gang, mm-hmm. which I'm pretty sure some of those Chinese guys were just doughy white men in the season. Yeah.
But a different time in casting.
Yeah. Just some of the extras fighting in the background. But our introduction to Lopan is one of the best introductions to a character in movie history. And it's funny because I've seen this movie a handful of times. I haven't watched it several times. In fact, the last time I watched it, I think we tried to watch it with our wives. I don't think it worked. And so that means that the last time that I watched it was probably in 2005 with you. But so it gets me every time when certain things show up in the movie that I kind of forget about. But Lopan's introduction is one of those. And so
are you talking about like when he just is in front of the truck and they run?
Yes. Over? And he's like beckoning him to just run him over.
I know.
And then they show like this dummy being hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. He's beckoning him with his Lee press-on nails, which he wears throughout
But he's also like just smiling, just the whole scene, the way he's doing it is hilarious.
And I think the first time I saw this, now granted I was grade schooler, but I don't think I knew that the two Lopans were the same people.
Yeah, it's
like, you know, that goes back to it being kind of a confusing movie in some ways. But
well, Lopan, let's call this out. Lopan is a 2000 plus year old Chinese person, right? Yes.
Yeah.
His first name is David.
Yeah. Because Jack Burton keeps calling him Dave.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Yeah. Oh, man. But sometimes he's young, David Lopan.
Right.
And sometimes I mean, the old David Lopan is one of the best characters ever.
Yeah. Yeah. An amazing villain. I mean, like this guy, I don't know that there is a character this old in any movie or looks this old. I mean, this guy needs some oil of Olay stat.
He's almost translucent.
Yeah. His face looks like you've taken all the toppings off of a pizza, and what you have left, that's what his face looks like.
Where some of the cheese was removed with the topping.
Yeah. It's like you've got some sauce there. But anyway.
Old David Lopan was quite possibly my second favorite character in the movie. I mean, a credit to the actor James Hong, who's one of those guys who's been in he's 200 different movies.
For reference, he is the maitre d' in the Chinese restaurant episode of Seinfeld.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But he's been in a million other things, and he's just he's 90 and still working, I saw.
Holy crap.
Yeah, but he, and also in the commentary, they said that he got his start in show business by going to like USO things in World War II.
Oh, wow.
And he was playing. No, he was playing. Oh, gosh. He was acting as if he was somebody else, like some, I want to say white guy. Yeah. I forgot who they said. I'd have to go back and look. But it was kind of surprising how he got his start. But all the way back in World War II, and he's still working.
Well, and yeah, so yeah, the old David Lopan, which that was where Indeed came from. Like, and that's when I said that I really, really, really committed my life to watching this movie in high school. That was one of the quotes that was rewound over and over and over because he speaks. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe. I mean, you'll have to play the cut here so that people get an idea. Because he sort of builds up to that Indeed. Like, he's like getting more and more excited. And then when he gets to Indeed, it just like it explodes. And then the other thing is when he is trying to tickle Kim Cattrall. And he's like,
yes.
It's just the noises it makes. It's so funny. And one of his lines, too, that really cracks me up is he realizes that somebody's breaking into his fortress. He's talking to the, you know, the Baskethead warriors. And
Thunder, lightning, and rain, by the way.
Okay. Thunder, lightning, and rain. And he, you know, again, he's a, whatever, 800-year-old man or whatever he is. And his line is, "This really pisses me off to no end." I don't know why that was funny, but it was.
Yeah, it's just so many. The coochie coochie coo thing is just another. It's so hilarious and so out of just out of nowhere in a way too. That just kills me. All right, so what else? What else about this movie? Oh, I was gonna say. So I looked it up. James Hong, he was doing stuff in the Korean War, not World War II.
Okay.
But he has also played in over 600 television and film roles in his career. That is crazy. But anyway, I was trying to figure out who he was playing as when he was entertaining the troops, but I can't remember that part of the commentary, so it's okay.
Well, okay, let's talk about the casting in this. Jack Burton, played by Kurt Russell, obvious home run. I mean, like, Kurt Russell in this movie, I think I referred to Jack Burton as being the quarterback of kind of like, or he was quarterbacking a situation. If you think of him as the quarterback of this movie, it would be like someone throwing for 8 touchdowns, having 550 yards, quarterback rating of like 152, if that's even possible. I don't even know. but literally, like, he's in every single scene. Every line that comes out of his mouth is like high entertainment. You're laughing. It's the movie moves really quickly. He's, you know, whether or not he's the hero of the movie, he's definitely the star of the movie.
Sure.
I think we said this when we watched this and we watched the DVD commentary, like, Kurt Russell is somebody that I would love to like go get a hamburger with and just and talk about this movie, actually. But yeah, he just seems like such a fun hang, and you can just tell he's like having a blast playing Jack Burton. At least that's how.
Well, the DVD commentary is fun to listen to because it's just him and John Carpenter just laughing about and they're not even reviewing the movie. They're not even talking about the movie. They're just talking about their lives. And of course, they did 5 movies together, I think.
Did the 2 Snake Plissken movies.
Yeah. And then they did The Thing. And then they did a TV movie where Kurt Russell played Elvis.
No. So yeah, I think that's right. I remember that.
I think they did 5 altogether. But so they're just kind of like old friends, basically. And the weird thing about this commentary, they recorded it in 2001. And they're talking about this movie being 15, 16 years old.
Oh.
And it's been 20 years since the commentary, which
is funny.
Just blows my mind. But yeah, the funny thing about the commentary is at the very end, they're saying, "Hey, thanks for doing this. This was a ton of fun." And Kurt Russell goes, "Well, it was a good time. The beers were cold and the cigarettes weren't stale." That's like what he ended the DVD commentary.
That's like a Jack of Burton line. That's a Jack Burton line.
It is. They did. The beer was cold and the cigarettes weren't stale.
Thank you, Kurt Russell. Okay, so let's talk about Kim Cattrall. Thoughts on her as Grace?
Yeah, she played her part, you know, perfectly. I mean, she kind of played the standoffish foil to Jack Burton. As far as a love interest, it was kind of like an anti-love interest in many respects. She rejected his every overture until the very end, And when she wanted him to kiss her, and he said, nah, not going to do it.
Yeah. Was there something about that kiss in the sewer that turned him off? And he didn't
know exactly.
Like, okay. Because like, if he kissed her in the sewer, and if for some reason her breath was worse than how that sewer smelled, like maybe he was like, no, thank you.
Because they did kiss again, didn't they, at the end? Hilarious part is when he kissed right before they fought Lopan, and she's got like, she's okay. So she's supposed to marry Lopan, and so is Wang's girlfriend. He's going to marry them both, but he's going to kill one. Again, this gets into the confusion of the...
He's going to sacrifice one to appease the gods and, quote-unquote, live out his earthly pleasures with Mao Yin.
Yes. So they're kind of made up in like this traditional... Both the females are made up in this kind of traditional Chinese makeup, which includes a lot of heavy powder and bright red lipstick. And so he kisses Gracie Law after he's rescued her. And for the next 5 minutes, he has that white powdered makeup with the bright red lipstick on his lips until she wipes it off of him. And I almost wished that she hadn't even done that. Like, I wish that they had just pushed it further.
Well, and I mean, he goes on like a monologue, you know, talking to Lopan with that on his face. And he actually has it on his face when he kills Lopan. So maybe that kind of like speaks to Kurt Russell's point. Like, even when he has the heroic moment, he's got lipstick all over his face.
Yeah.
And I watched this with my wife yesterday, and she said, like when they kissed in the elevator, she was like, in real life, he would have lipstick all over his face after that. And like when she saw that pulled away, she just like, she lost it.
Yeah, that's great, man. Your wife, Alicia, do you know how many movies Alicia has watched with me in this undertaking?
Air Bud.
Air Bud. That's it. She wouldn't even watch like Cool Runnings with me.
So just real quick on Kim Cattrall, though. So before this movie, she had been in a lot of TV, and she had been in...
She was in Porky's.
She was in Porky's and Police Academy.
Yeah.
And not like nothing else. I mean,
she hadn't done Mannequin.
No, Mannequin yet. Came out the next year, which was obviously her, you know, magnum opus in many ways. But so she was, I mean, she was an unknown, and I did not do any research on this. I would assume that maybe like a studio wanted a bigger name than her for this movie, but
yeah, I don't remember them talking about anything like that. Of course, they just sung her praises in the commentary, but yeah, I don't recall anything like that.
Yeah, but you know, in this movie, she's kind of the brains to Kurt Russell's brawn.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, like the purpose she serves is she does a lot of explaining of why things are happening. And I was telling Alicia this last night, like I had never seen a movie like this before seeing it in the theater. And I haven't seen a movie quite like it since, where it's like, there's parody movies, you know, like The Naked Gun is parodying mm-hmm. cop movies, or Airplane is parodying like those tragedy movies from the 70s, like Airport and stuff like that. But this was obviously sort of a parody of a kung fu movie, but just in a completely different way. And it's hard to describe. Like it's not just overtly silly, but it's silly enough to get laughs. It's just kind of strange.
I don't know. I would almost disagree with you in it not being overtly silly. There's plenty of kind of overtly silly parts of this movie.
What I mean by like, obviously, like
it's not like a Naked Gun Airplane type of movie.
Like you know, there are cartoonish things that happen in the movie. Like, you know, you shoot the gun into the ceiling and the debris knocks you out. Like that's cartoonish, but like, those other movies I listed, like there is a gag, there's like some sort of sight gag
sure.
every second. And this is this is more following like the actual rhythms of a real movie, more so than.
Sure. It's like an action movie that got hijacked by a comedy.
Yeah. And before that became like, I don't really watch the Fast and Furious movies, but.
Oh, like, you're missing out.
Oh, am I?
Those are fun. They're fun in a stupid way.
But aren't they, don't they like introduce some comedy and stuff into them?
I mean, yes, in some way. I mean, you know, they started off as a very serious kind of, you know, street racing movies. But yeah. Somewhere along the way, they introduced The Rock and they introduced Jason Statham. And they kind of overtook the Vin Diesel and
Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. I was wanting to say Paul Overstreet. characters. And of course, that's caused some rift with Vin Diesel. But the writers have turned it into a kind of a buddy cop type thing, almost.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah. It's almost like a, I mean, they riff on each other and kind of, it's one of those insult like a Bad Boys type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it's fun in a silly sort of way.
Well, I'll put it. Yeah. Like I said, I have not seen a movie like Big Trouble Little China since, like that has that particular balance of, okay, this is a kung fu movie and it's over the top, but there's also like these cartoony things mixed in. And yeah, I mean, you know, I watch it as an adult and I don't think that they're not trying to be funny, but it's also way more reserved than some other true parodies.
Sure. Well, it's not slapstick humor. Well, I mean, there are parts that are slapstick. It's tough. It's a tough thing to capture because, you know, shooting a gun into the air and getting knocked out by the falling rocks is nothing but slapstick. But the majority of the humor does come from the intelligence of the writing, of the actual written word and spoken word.
Yeah, and the whole lipstick thing, like, that's fairly understated. Like, it's taking place during this, you know, for this movie, kind of a serious scene where it's the face-off between Lopan and Jack Burton, and, you know, theoretically Lopan has all of this magic on his side and everything. But the whole time that's going on, Kurt Russell has ruby red lipstick all over his face.
Yeah, it's funny. So we won't. Well, first of all, do you have anything else that you want to add? I feel like there's so much in this movie that we could. Do you think that they were trying to set up a sequel with the Pork Chop Express riding through the night and the Beast in the background, or do you think they were just calling back to the Beast?
No, I think that was just sort of I don't think that they were necessarily trying to set up a sequel because was this movie that successful at the box office?
No, it was not. Yeah. They thought it was going to be. That's one thing they do talk about in the commentary you know, their test results and everything came back like it was going to be just a smash hit. It came out like right in the middle of summer, July 2nd. They were trying to beat Eddie Murphy's The Golden Child, which also dealt with green-eyed Chinese women. Ironically, but they were expecting this to just be a smash hit, and it just didn't resonate with the overall general public. I looked it up just now. The budget was $25 million and the worldwide gross was only $11 million. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe they were leaving the door open. Maybe if had it been a smash hit, you know, they would have done it. I would be down for a Big Trouble Little China 2.
35 years later.
Well, I don't know about 35 years later. Yeah, I don't know how good Kurt Russell would look in the tank top these days. But
yeah. Although, have you seen? I'm sure you haven't, but maybe you have because you're a Kurt Russell fan. The kids, you know, they enjoy a good Christmas movie every once in a while, and Kurt Russell came out with one a couple of weeks ago or a couple of years ago called The Christmas Chronicles. And then he came up with a sequel last year. And it's actually really funny. Yeah, he's really funny in the first one. The second one is a little not as good, but yeah. The first Christmas Chronicles was actually pretty funny.
I am a Kurt Russell fan. I will check that out.
All right, so I don't feel the need to rate this one because I think that if we were to give it a rating, whatever it is, we'd both give it 5 stars.
I give it a billion. I give it 5 billion index finger pointed in the air, whatever that little symbol was that those guys were making.
You know, I'll say this. Let's make the rating Uzis because I feel like Uzis played a prominent role in this movie, but also in almost every movie, like any movie that dealt with guns in the 80s, there were a lot of Uzis.
Was Kurt Russell's gun an Uzi, though?
I think at one point he had an Uzi. It's like this small machine gun type thing.
Well, because the original gun that he was given, where he was like, hey, I'll trade you, you know, like
the Magnum. Yeah.
He had some sort of gun that looked like it could be an Uzi, but like he definitely was pulling the trigger more than once. This, you know, we're getting into stupid details now, but like when he shot that one guy, like, whoever the maitre d' at that restaurant was, the maitre d' at Wang's restaurant says, is that the first time you've ever plugged somebody? He goes, of course not. And, yeah. But he was like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. They look like Uzis. And I always.
Yeah, he may have had
Uzis. I thought that Uzis were going to be a bigger deal in my life than they really are.
Snake Eye, yeah, Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe, he had his weapons arsenal was he had a sword and two Uzis.
Two Uzis, right.
That made him like one of the coolest characters.
Yeah. So I'll ask you this. Where does this fall in your – and it may be a hard question to answer because you just have so many movies in the 80s that are amazing. You know, your Karate Kids and your Rocky Threes and – but even things like Airplane and The Naked Gun, and you know, it's maybe too broad of a question, but if you could distill it, where would this rank in your 80s movies list? I mean, is it going to be in your top 10? Is it going to be top 5? I mean, is it too hard of a question?
Well, okay. Because if we're talking about movies that came out between the years 1980 in 1989, and that's the only criteria. I mean, it's top 5, I would say.
Really? Really?
In the 80s? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just in terms, like, because I'm, like, it being entertaining from beginning to end.
I've
rewatched it over and over and over again. I've quoted it. You know, it's hard to put it in the same category as you might put, you know, like the movie Tender Mercies or something like that. But
an officer and a gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Chariots of Fire or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says something when you keep rewatching a movie.
Sure.
Cause it's so well done, and you know, it's not filet mignon. This movie is not filet mignon, but it is one of the most amazing hamburgers ever made.
Sure. Yeah. It itches a scratch. That's for sure. Or scratches an itch.
Right. We got it.
One of those two. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I would say it's probably top 25 for me. I can't put it as high as you because I mean, it's an amazing movie and it's hilarious, but I haven't.
Well, see, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I also like, you know, like there's the category of like, did it come out between January 1st, 1980 and December 31st, 1989? And then there's like sort of this genre, which is 80s movies. And
sure.
I almost pull this movie out of that category because it's a little bit more transcendent than just the 80s. Cause like, I saw it in the 80s when I really, came to know it, love it, memorize it was the 90s.
Sure.
But, you know, like I think of Ferris Bueller's Day Off as an 80s movie.
16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, stuff like that.
Well, and, you know, this movie doesn't really, it doesn't have like a soundtrack that features a bunch of top 40 hits. It does have the song over the closing credits definitely sounds super 1980s, but also.
Do you know who's singing that song?
Is that John Carpenter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like his editor and like his gaffer. Like it's like the people in the movie are making that song.
Well, okay. That song is hilarious. But also like if you listen to the just interstitial music in this movie, go compare it to Stranger Things. I feel like, I feel like the Stranger Things guys definitely paid attention to this movie. 'Cause it's 100%. It's kind of like that synthy peril is just around the corner kind of music, which, you know, of course, John Carpenter, his most famous movie is Halloween, which is big on music. But yeah, even though there's some 80s elements to this movie, in some ways, I don't consider it a quote unquote 80s
movie. And I guess I was talking more about the decade. What you said makes sense. But it's one of those movies where I sometimes forget about it, to be honest. You know, when I'm thinking of movies that I've enjoyed that were made in the 80s, it doesn't come top to mind to me, but it is hilarious and it is fun. It's a great watch. So I really enjoyed watching it again, which leads us to the next movie. And this will be my choice for I think we're calling this an out of bounds movie because it doesn't have anything to do with sports.
Yeah.
I'm going with a lesser Hanks movie, a lesser Tom Hanks movie. And it's only lesser because it was before he really became a huge star. It was after Splash and all of that, but he hadn't reached Forrest Gump Apollo 13 status yet. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite Tom Hanks movies, The Burbs.
All right. Yeah. This is a great one.
Yeah. I'm gonna enjoy watching this one again. So that'll be our next movie. Hey.
This is sort of, these two movies are kind of cleansing the palate of Sunset Park or whatever that horrible Rhea Perlman movie we had to watch.
Well, yeah. We had Necessary Roughness was a little bit of a reprieve. Yeah. But we had, you know, several stinkers in a row. Well, you didn't like Lords of Dogtown, but yeah, Ready to Rumble wasn't just Ladybugs.
I mean, I did like Ladybugs kind of.
So anyways, yeah. So thanks again for listening to Slow Pitch. Visit us at Twitter at Slow Pitch Cast. You can engage with us on Instagram at Slow Pitch Podcast. We are being patronized, Sean. We have a patron at patreon.com. And they went the full $25 lighting cigars with $1,000 bills, apparently. So you can support us.
What kind of sad shape does your life have to be in to give this podcast $25 a month? Thank you, though. Seriously, thank you. I'm grateful. I'm worried about you, but I'm thankful.
But yeah, so that's at Slow Pitch or patreon.com/slowpitch. And until The Burbs, that's it for now.
Peace.
You just listen to the old Pork Chop Express here now and take his advice on a dark and stormy night when the lightning's crashing and the thunder's rolling and the rain's coming down in sheets thick as lead. Just remember what old Jack Burton does when the earth quakes and the poison arrows fall from the sky and the pillars of heaven shake. Yeah, Jack Burton just looks that big old storm right square in the eye and he says, give me your best shot, pal. I can take it.
Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and crackers, Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Wait, is that the monster coming out of the back of the truck?
It's a monster, all right. I wasn't sure if you'd hear that or not.
Yeah. Yeah. This Zencaster. Pretty good. Yeah. What was I saying?